AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. We had Dr. Joseph Eastman on with us a few weeks ago. I was going to have him on last week, and then I had COVID, so we decided to postpone that. But he is kind enough to join us today. He is a scientist. He's worked with NASA, LTER, Colorado State. He's currently on the University of Texas, Austin COVID modeling team, and he is kind enough to join us today to talk about the models that he has been producing as it refers to Omicron and coronavirus. Dr. Eastman, thank you very much. I appreciate the time as always.
Well, I appreciate you having me back, Matt.
My pleasure. You are always welcome back. I appreciate science. I think science is good.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. What a few now.
What a concept in this day and age. Oh, wow. Yes, indeed.
Don't look up.
Since the last time we talked, and let's not pull any punches. The COVID models you were putting out when we last talked were fairly stark, looking at possibly a 2-month stretch of Omicron with a large portion of the state being infected. Since that time, it seems like a lot of models have pulled back. What are your models looking like right now in regard to the Omicron wave?
Yeah, I'm seeing the same general tendency in my models, which I think is a good thing.
And, yeah.
You know, as the closer we get to the peak, sometimes you worry if they all converge on the same answer, and then you're going, boy, what did I mess up now? But all the models are pretty consistent. As we get more data, and we're able to calibrate some of the parameters a little better, we're getting a better grip on it, because this has really been one of the toughest variants that I've had to introduce into the model yet.
If I can ask, what was one of the things that changed in the models that you were seeing as far as numbers? And I don't mind. You can get very sciencey here. I don't mind about that. What came in on this that changed kind of how it going from this, you know, longer, maybe a 2-month spread down to, okay, we might actually hit the peak earlier?
Yeah, the closer we've gotten and we've gotten more data on some of the what I call a transmission matrix that it kind of goes through the different demographics and sees how susceptible that population is, you know, 65 and older and 18 and younger and in between there. And as we got more data and thank God more testing, we're able to get a little bit better grip on what is going on and who's more susceptible. I think that's had some of it. The big push in vaccines also has helped. I mean, you got to give Biden administration credit for what they've done. It went from, you know, just about 2 million to over 200 million in a year. So we're starting to see the fruits of that labor come true. And I don't know, just a personal observation, I'm starting to see a lot more people wear masks.
Oh, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, it does seem as if in the last 2 weeks that, you know, people that might have been hesitant are all of a sudden, oh, no, I'm wearing a mask now.
Yes, I know it. When they suddenly see that, oh boy, the peril is here at my doorstep, that maybe I should wear a mask. I think it hits home, and hopefully, you know, forecasts like I show you, hopefully people can see that, where, you know, you literally see pixels covering up your house, you know, when I show a map of Minnesota. That's all fine the detail we get down to. And I got a lot of people reacting to me, and there's like, you know, that really hits home instead of seeing a line graph that, you know, gives me an idea when it's coming and the number of people, but I don't know how close to home it's going to get. And here up in the Front Range, I can see Highway 169 with a low infection path on it when I go through my model simulation. It's crazy.
I want to drive people to, I want to drive people to your Twitter account, because you do post a lot of great information in there. JLEROLLBLUES, Jelly Roll Blues is where you'll find him, Dr. Eastman there. And he posts a lot of great information. I mean, are we going to see this? I mean, you talk about outstate Minnesota. How are your models looking at what has happened with past waves, which is metro area gets it heavy, then outstate gets it heavy? Will this follow the same trend?
Yes, this should. Although, because it's so contagious, the outstate portion is going to die out a little bit slower than it has in the past, just because the transmission matrix is so high compared to Delta. So you see that decay quite a bit slower, and actually in the animation that I show, you'll see that too. And if people log on to my account or look at my Twitter account, they'll be able to see just what I'm talking about. And we're looking by June. I got my fingers crossed. That's kind of where everything is going to kind of go down into what I would call a kind of a background pool. It's still going to be there. Really interesting. A doctor, a geneticist, gave a talk about 2 months ago, and she was saying that maybe this is the first strain of the variant that is starting to look like more like an influenza type of virus. You know, where we're going to have to live with it. But, you know, I don't want to minimize it because it's influenza is 0.408 mortality rate. You know, that's what, 1/1,000th of a percent mortality, whereas we're looking at with Delta 0.0125 or 1.25%, quite a bit difference. We still don't have a good handle on Omicron's mortality rate. And, and then we got the long-term COVID impacts. We don't have that with the flu. So you'll see people start to try to minimize this a little bit and say, oh, we're going to be all right. It's going to be just like the flu. Well, no, that's not quite true. So you got to take it with a little grain of salt.
I want to get back to, and we'll definitely, I want to talk about two things you just mentioned there, but I want to go back to the spread vector here. How, I mean, this is, and this is one of the things that I imagine is wildly difficult when you're looking at something of this nature, is that we knew that Omicron was more susceptible, but I think we've gotten down to the point where it's clear that, and I don't want to make it seem too simplistic, but it's the kind, this variant seems like you can walk past someone in a freaking airport and you're going to get it. It doesn't, it's not like they said in the past where it's like, oh, you know, 10 minutes in a room with someone and you're likely going to get it. Now it seems like this one is really almost a minimal contact and this goes. I mean, trying to figure that into a model has got to be, especially when it's a varying level, you don't quite know how contagious it is. It's got to be wildly difficult.
And like we were talking about earlier, you're precisely right. We are seeing the ability to model this better, and we're kind of pulling things back down to not a reasonable level by any means, but it's not looking like 15-20% of the population walking around with this thing at any given time, but more like around 10%, maybe a little bit more than that. So, as we get this contact matrix down, there's a lot more confidence in our models. And I put out one today on these ensembles. I'd like to put out a little more to kind of show you the spread in these models and how we got to look at it. And you can't just have one forecast. You got to have, I got 21 forecasts going at one time. And I look at those, they kind of give me more skill to predict what's going to happen by varying the parameters in the initial population and stuff like that. So we're feeling a little better.
Okay. One of the things that's interesting is, and I've seen this coming down, is that a lot of people, when they're talking about the amount of positive tests, is they're coming down, they're saying, well, one thing you need to keep in mind is it's not all the tests from that one day. That some of these tests are a few days old, maybe even over a week old, and we're finally getting results reported on them. But at the same time, we're seeing what I think the test positivity rate right now is 23.7. Those two things seem to try to contradict each other. When people try to say, oh, well, it might be plateauing out and maybe starting to go on the downside, well, that's one thing. But then shouldn't the test positivity rate number start showing some level of at least starting to drop?
Yeah, there's a couple little factors that are going into that, too. A lot of people are not even going in for COVID that are testing positive for it. And I think people are a little more aware once they get a little sniffle, it's like they're tested right now. So, you know, your percent positivity is going to kind of coincide with the number of people going in that think they probably might have it, and also people that they don't even know they got it. And they're going in, and, you know, hospital is mandatory. You got to test the person. So that's part of what we're seeing in the high positive return rates on the test. So,
you'd mentioned vaccines. You'd mentioned, like, influenza. I don't think anyone, I get a flu shot. Well, I got the flu one time about 30 years ago, and I'm never skipping a flu shot ever again. It kind of puts you in perspective. I mean, so are we looking at, we could end up having a situation where we just have to have a regular annual or maybe biannual COVID shot?
I really think that is where we're headed, you know, because the seriousness compared to influenza is, it potentially so much more serious. And, you know, we're basically sending our kids to school in a petri dish right now, too, which is very irritating to me.
Yes, it is.
Personally, we know this peak is pretty much, we're pretty certain it's coming. Why can't we just close down schools for a couple of weeks, you know, and say, let's ride this out. Maybe we got to go a little longer, but, you know, we got a pretty good grip on what this window is going to be, and there's absolutely no reason we can't. We've been in this for 2 years. Why can't we wait another 2 weeks?
Because things have changed. They've gotten to the point now, Doctor, where it's like I said, it's limiting inconvenience has become the larger priority versus trying to stop needless suffering or needless death. That is the reality, is that we have just said, you know, sure, we could do this, but it's inconvenient. And so we are ruled by selfishness, and the end result is people are dying, people are getting sick, and people just shrug their shoulders and say, what are you going to do? Well, we could save them, but, oh, I guess we can't do that. So,
yeah, inconvenient truth, you know. And you grew up around the times when I grew up, and, you know, we all felt a sense of community and camaraderie.
Yes.
Back then, and we're all in it together, and now it's like, me. It is very frustrating.
I don't care how many people die. I want my 2-for-1 jalapeno popper platters, and that's just that. And it's just really, this is America. Thank you very much, Donald Trump. One last thing I wanted to touch on here with you, and you mentioned this earlier. There have been some people who have said, not just with Omicron, but for COVID overall, that indeed for years, maybe even decades to come, especially in these areas, in these communities where there has been very limited vaccination or less than 50% vaccination, that COVID is going to be a recurring illness that is going to come through kind of like measles outbreaks and chickenpox outbreaks used to, that it's just something that we're going to have to get used to, especially in the low vaccinated communities, that there's going to be a fairly high transmission rate that's still going to be there. Is that what you are forecasting too? Is that in the years to come, that in areas that are, you know, kind of like Brainerd area, they don't have a lot of vaccinated people over there. Is that an area that for in 10 years, they could still be seeing COVID outbreaks?
I yes, definitely. It's going to remain in the background. I mean, I can run this thing out with no new variant, and you'll see it's going to persist. It's always going to have what we call a susceptible population that it can feed off of. It's always going to be there if everybody's not vaccinated. And then, of course, other countries, it's always going to be stewing there, and really susceptible in countries with high HIV populations and things like that. So it is going to be here. And that's why I haven't heard much lately about the Pfizer working on the Omicron, you know, specific vaccination. But when you start looking at some of the long-term effects and things, that probably should run to completion at least. So that can be part of the whole vaccination delivery system too. So I agree, though. That is where we're heading. little epidemic pockets here and there are going to pop up just like the measles. And we've seen that as more of the anti-vaxxers make themselves more vocal and more people follow that kind of stuff. We saw that happen.
And they're not going to go away. I mean, there's some guy, you shared a model with us, and some idiot just tweeted, it's like, masks don't work, boosters and vaccines don't work. You know, they're only going to get more belligerent and scream louder because they just... This is the hill they have decided to die on. And it's like everything with, especially in the far right, Sir Trump, is that they believe, they just cannot comprehend. They have banked everything on the lies that they believe. And, the further we go down the road, they're going to just get louder and scream louder and think that that's effective counterpoint to the entire established medical community.
Exactly. When did screaming louder become winning an argument? I never figured that one out.
Okay. Welcome to cable news.
You're darn right.
Yeah, I always look back at Crossfire when that was on CNN. I said that was the beginning of it, when people just started yelling at each other and they thought it was good. That was the beginning of it, because after that it was... and now what do we have? We've got, idiots showing up at school board meetings screaming, I'm going to murder you and your kids in the home if you shut the school down. And the school, because they're terrified and they don't quite know what to do, is going along with the psychopaths and the howler monkeys. And it really is kind of disturbing.
I love the way you hammer these points home on your show. It's greatly appreciated.
I greatly appreciate you. Let's tell you what. Let's try to have you back, if not next week, the week after. Get another update on the models and see how things are doing. Okay.
I will, and in the meantime, I'll keep looking for more variants of concern and make sure we don't have any of those coming down the pipeline.
I always appreciate that. I want to, once again, it's Jelly Roll Blues up on Twitter, JelleRollBlues. Go follow him. Dr. Joseph Eastman, kind enough to join us to talk about his COVID models. Doctor, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
I appreciate you too, Matt. Thanks a lot.
Take care. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.